Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello, hello.
And returning after a week off is Jay.
Hello. It's been two weeks since I was last on.
I tell you, of all the podcasts to miss, I know, yeah. You missed the Warhammer Fest mega episode.
It was, the bumper special.
Over 2 hours, that's a Sprues and Brews record.
At least I didn't miss the Warhammer Fest itself.
Yeah. That is true.
That's true. So yes, this is the podcast after Warhammer Fest.
Yeah.
So it's going to feel like a short one.
It is. Well, yeah, obviously, we had a busy news-packed week last time. I think even Games Workshop are giving our wallets a little bit of a break this week.
Good.
Not massively so, though, for me.
No, not massively so. So yeah, this is our weekly podcast of all things Warhammer-related. If you want to check out our website, please do spruesandbrews.com. You can also find us on Twitter at spruesandbrews and on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews. Now, later in the podcast, we're going to be talking about innovations when it comes to painting miniatures and Warhammer. Yeah. Well, not just painting, building...
Hobby advancements, I suppose.
Hobby advancements is a better way of putting it. And to correspond with that, that's going to be our top three as well. So our top three products or innovations that have helped us hobby better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a cool way of putting it.
I've just completed my homework.
You just completed your homework. So that's going to be our top three this week. We have got our latest news coming up and we will also have the community top three picks as well. But as we always do with our podcast, we will start with a bit of a hobby progress. Now, I think, bearing in mind our conversation before the podcast started, Jay, we'll start.
I was faking. I've tricked you.
You tricked me.
He's been to the army in the last week. He's been in jail.
I want to start with myself then, because this should be quick. So I've been away. I've been in London for the weekend.
On a painting course. Painting and building course.
Not on a painting and building course.
You should have taken some paints and some models. That's what you do when you're in London, isn't it?
Yeah, I should have done some. No, so unfortunately, my hobby output from last week is absolutely zero. Not a single model has been painted. I've not had any games. I've not done anything hobby related.
Basically, just let the side down, Dave.
Exactly. I've just had well and truly a week off the hobby, unfortunately.
Leave the room now, Dave. Yeah, Matt will carry on with the hobby podcast.
I did pop into, while I was in London, I did pop into the Tottenham Court Road Warhammer store.
That's a nice store.
It's a really nice store. Some really nice painted armies in there. One in particular jumped out at me, and I put some pictures on Twitter, was their Space Wolf army with the really icy, snowy bases.
Yeah.
That's a really nice army. And I didn't get any snaps of them, but there was a really nice Daughters of Cain army as well, Marathi in both her variations. So that was really cool. Some cool staff in there. I only walked away with some Evocators, some Curse Breakers sleeves for Night Vault.
That's pretty restrained, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's because everything down in London, Matt, is super expensive. Super expensive. All we did is eat and drink, and that's just absolutely drained my finances.
Well, relatively speaking, Games Workshop's quite cheap in London.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can you live off sprues?
Live off sprues. So there's my hobby input, and that's zero. So Jay, how about yourself?
Mine was a little bit more than zero, but not that much more than zero, to be fair. So I was, I've received my Sylvaneth Arch Revenant.
Mm-hmm.
I've built my Sylvaneth Arch Revenant.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. I've also done some more work on my Sylvaneth Shadespire Warband. But that is it. Oh, and I did one more Dwarf Shield before I went to Germany.
One more Dwarf Shield.
Yeah.
A single Dwarf Shield. So how many Dwarf Shields have you got left to paint?
19 more Dwarf Shields left to paint.
Okay, so at that rate, you might be finished by the Dwarfs.
The other 19 are nearly done. I say I got one Dwarf Shield done, it was just the highlights on one Dwarf Shield. I'm alright, I'm good. The Dwarfs will be ready.
Well,
we've got like a month, chaps, we best get some practice games in.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we were talking about this before. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be so cool. I'm picking up, it's good old payday on Friday, so I'm going to pick up my Lord Arcanum on unpronounceable
Pegasus thing. Big winged beast.
So yeah,
cool.
Matt, you have however been doing some hobbying.
I have
some
now,
proper hobbying
now. I let the side down last week by only painting three chariots, and I do apologize to all the listeners out there for this troubling and hard time, but you know, I've redeemed myself this week. I have painted four Heralds of Slaanesh on a variety of different chariots. We've got two on Exalted Chariots, we've got one on a Hellflayer, and one on just a standard vanilla Seeker Chariot. Part of me never wants to see another Seeker Chariot again in my life, but then the other part of me wants to buy more and make a list with just chariots in it.
And that's probably going to be the part of Matt that breaks, and you'll go out and buy a load more chariots.
That is normally what happens. Yeah. So, did that. I painted all the Endless Spells as well. They were really fun to paint.
Oh, the Slaanesh ones, yeah.
Yeah, really cool. I have started on the Fane, the scenery piece, yesterday.
Yeah.
I did all the gold and stuff on the base. Just need to do the main bit, the big icon and the swirly portal. And I did a tester model, which is rare. I don't tend to do tester models. I tend to just
go on it,
batch paint it, and you know, see how it goes. But partially because of the new allegiance in Forbidden Power, mm-hmm. with a mixed kind of order, kind of force in there, was a good excuse to theme my Caradhran Overlords similar to my Fire Slayers. So using the same palette, just kind of played around with it and did a little tester model. But it turned out all right. I think it looks okay.
Cool.
Nice one. Yeah, it does look good. I've seen pictures of that. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it does look really good.
So I'll probably get them finished because we're going to... Well, I'm going to the Grand Slam, the Underworlds tournament. I don't know if you chaps have got tickets yet.
We haven't got tickets yet, no, but I was just paid this week, so I'll be buying one.
Awesome, cool. So yeah, I want to get them painted for that. And then, yeah, in between projects, I might paint up a Gun Hauler, maybe.
Cool. Oh. I'm looking forward to seeing that scheme sort of blown up over a Caradhran airship.
Yeah, I need to work out what colours to put where. I'm thinking the Ironarch flesh, is it? The Idoneth kind of skin colour on like the body of the ship, maybe, and then leave the metallics for the... Come on, but they call that the ether cloud thing on the top of it.
The thing that makes it float.
The thing that makes it float,
yeah. Yeah,
because I think that'd be better in metallics rather than like a hot air balloon kind of jobby going on.
Yeah,
excellent. You did touch upon something there actually, but I think we'll talk a bit more about it in the next news segment in regards to Forbidden Power. So at this point, we'll take a pause and we'll come back with the news in just a moment. And so on to this week's news, Matt. What have we got on the horizon?
So not million big boxes or scenery pieces or expansions out this week, but we've got some pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
So for Necromunda, we have got the Book of Peril.
The Book of Peril.
That sounds ominous, doesn't it? Now this is £22.50 and contains rules, I believe, for all the bounty hunters we've seen so far for Necromunda, plus rules for the Badlands, a new kind of region to fight in, and rules for putting together a Venator bounty hunter gang. So a gang made out of bounty hunters.
Yeah.
Now, I'm very tempted to do a bounty hunter gang for Necromunda because they are amazing models.
It's funny. I meant to mention to you guys, actually, I was looking at the new Cal Jericho model and I was like, that's really cool. It's also in plastic as well.
It is plastic. Well, it's funny you should mention that because on pre-order on Saturday is Cal Jericho.
Yeah.
And Scabs.
Yeah.
So obviously old-time Games Workshop fans remember these from a series of comics that they were in Warhammer Weekly, I believe, first.
Mm.
And their antics in the Underhive. And yeah, brand new plastic kit for the two models, which I was not expecting. I thought it was going to be like a resin kit or something.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
Is this the first plastic? The gangs are plastic.
And we had the Ambot in plastic as well.
Yeah.
So
I've been increasingly tempted to just get a box of Orlocks.
We'll see. I've got the Beastman bounty hunter, so I might get Cal Jericho. I might get the squats.
I've still got him floating around somewhere as well. I picked him up, but during a moment of weakness when I thought I might be playing Necromunda a bit more.
Maybe we'll do some Necromunda as a palate cleanser at some point.
Yeah,
cool. So yes, so that's coming out, and then there's also going to be some sleeves and cards and the usual bits and bobs that come out with the game.
Yeah,
which is cool. The big news though. This coming week is the greatest team in Blood Bowl are almost here.
The greatest team.
The greatest team.
That's not over-exaggerating at all.
Definitely not, and you'll definitely win every single game that you play with them.
The shortest. The shortest team?
Yeah, a little bit. They are the Greenfield Grasshuggers. the halfling team for Blood Bowl, famously known as being the worst team in Blood Bowl. Games which would describe it as Blood Bowl on hard mode.
Yeah.
You will not win any games. You will be rolling like three dice and your opponent picks for like every tackle. They are rubbish. They've got hardly any skills. They've got two new positionals. They've got a slightly stockier halfling with a helmet. Imagine that.
Is that a dwarf? A real dwarf?
It's almost a dwarf. He's almost that tall. And the throws and catches and all the usual bits and bobs, which is cool.
And if you do manage to win with them, then your opponent will feel terrible.
Exactly, and that is the goal in Bloodbear. They can take tree men, they're cool, but they like movement too, and they, get rooted and stuff, so...
But they can throw halflings.
They can throw halflings. So yeah, they are £20. Out alongside them is Spike! Journal 5, with the rules for the said halflings. And obviously, some of the new positionals and the rules have changed a little bit. Don't get too excited, they're not going to win any games, but, makes them slightly more competitive than rubbish, I suppose. And then dice, cards, and a pitch. The pitch is £26, which seems a bit on the high end to me.
It does seem a bit expensive.
Maybe we just haven't had a pitch for a while, and I can't remember how much the last one was.
I can't remember.
Did we ever find out what was on the reverse side?
I still don't know. I mean, we should know more details when it's on pre-order on Saturday, I guess.
Maybe that's why it's more expensive. There's like something brilliant on the other side.
Maybe you just win the game on the other side.
I think Matt...
There's only one end zone.
Yeah.
Matt.
And a buffet set up on the other side.
That's what I was going to say. I think on last week's podcast, Matt thought maybe there's a buffet on the other side.
Or a barbecue.
Or a barbecue.
Yeah. Option. There's lots of options with the halflings. Speaking of buffets and barbecues as well, for 1 week only, there's some special made to orders. The classic vintage tree man, which I believe is older than the old Wood Elf Tree Man.
Wow. Say vintage Tree Man for Blood Bowl?
As in, like, probably 80s, when did Blood Bowl first come out? This is an old Tree Man.
It looks like an old end, doesn't it? Like
It looks more basic than the old Tree Man. It's a very... What's the word I'm looking for here? Stylistically...
challenged.
Yeah. I'd just buy the nice... Forge World 1 because that looks really cool, but until then, if you want a variety for your second tree man, you can get the classic one if you want.
Cool.
Coming out alongside this though is the hot pot, the halfling hot pot.
Oh wow, yeah.
Which is a special thing they can buy, and it flings some hot soup on an opposing player, and it has like an AoE effect as well, so don't stand too close to it.
Ace.
But that's only available for 1 week, which is unusual for a meat order. They're normally longer than that, aren't they?
No, just one week. Do you think, because I think that there are rules for that hot pot, do you think we'll see that in Resin on Forge World in the future?
No, because this is kind of like that, the support team stuff. You don't really need a model for it. Some of them we have, like the cheerleaders, but like, we haven't got an official apothecary yet. Yeah. We haven't got like official coaches yet.
So does the hot pot not go on the pitch?
It's just
like when you support staff. But it's cool to have a model for it.
I thought it was like the dwarf.
Yeah, the grinder thing.
Yeah, I thought it was something you had on the pitch.
It's just because, halflings are like no points each. You've got lots of points to spend on extra stuff to just help tip the odds in your favour and then get completely battered.
Fair.
So that's all the Games Workshop stuff coming out. Not as much in previous weeks. I mean, it's still pretty good. We've got a big Necromunda release and we've got the halfling release for Blood Bowl. There are a few other bits of news. Modifus have announced Elder Scrolls Call to Arms.
Ooh, we're going away from WoW.
We are. Just a little tangent. It's still miniatures.
Yeah.
It's still miniatures.
Yeah, still miniatures.
This is a miniatures game based on the Elder Scrolls series. We don't know much more about it other than that there's a AI system so you can play it single player.
All right.
So you can delve into dungeons and basically Skyrim turned into a board game, I suppose.
That'd be cool.
Well, that sounds cool.
There is a cool dungeon crawler type miniature game called Rangers of the Shadow Deep or something like that, which has an AI system built in you can play yourself.
Cool.
So it's quite an interesting option because you can't, I mean, especially those guys where we work, sometimes it's hard to coordinate an evening where we're all together. If you've got a way to play with the miniatures on your tot, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think they've got rules for like having a war game as well with it. Obviously, in Skyrim, for example, you've got the Stormcloak Rebellion where you've got the two factions fighting off. So you can play them like that, or you can play the kind of dungeon crawler mode. We don't know much more yet. There's a Dragonborn model that you can order from their website for £15 for a 32mm resin model.
That's cheap.
I've ordered one to paint up just because I love Skyrim. You guys aren't as keen on Skyrim as I am, are you?
I enjoyed it.
I liked Skyrim. Skyrim I thought was brilliant. I loved the setting of Skyrim. But, I'm not a massive fan of it, but I liked it. Yeah.
So it's written by Mark Latham, who did The Walking Dead. I believe he was involved in the recent Harry Potter miniatures game. and previous editor of White Dwarf as well. So there's the Games Workshop link coming back at the end.
Yeah.
And I think they're at the UK Games Expo as well, so we might see what info we can get if there is any on the game there. And the last bit of non-GW news, Atlantis Miniatures, who we've featured before in the past, have launched their latest Kickstarter for Wood Elves.
Ooh.
Now, these look really, really nice miniatures.
I had a peek at these because you put a post up on spruceandbrews.com. Check out the link. Just before the podcast, Matt, and they are some seriously nice minis.
Yeah, they're really nice. I think there's a big bundle where you can get one of everything for a bargain price, including a really nice Lord mounted on an elk or something. Yeah, it looks really good. So, yeah, make sure to check those guys out.
I will check these out. I'm a sucker for Wood Elves.
Yeah, they're really nice. I mean, I'd be tempted to, if we proper get involved in a D&D sort of Warhammer, whatever, well, maybe, well, not Warhammer, because I buy a Warhammer image for that, maybe, to get one for that.
Yeah.
Because they're so nice.
I think they are probably more suited to kind of RPGs than maybe a full game.
Okay.
But I mean, you still use them. They look really, really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is all the news I've got this week, I'm afraid, Dave.
I've got one little bit.
Ooh, you've got some news.
Seeing as that Wood Elf, you've got the Wood Elves, and you've just mentioned about the Skyrim thing. I actually came across on Twitter yesterday. A guy is launching a new Kickstarter, which is you can find the link. I'll put the link in the podcast, and you can see it on our Twitter page as well. But I've just come back from London. I've been to London quite a few times. But what this guy's doing is he's built a team together to create a... it's almost like a D&D adventure book, but it's basically like a tour guide of London.
Oh, that's cool.
But in a very Dungeons & Dragons fantasy kind of style. So there's a lot of really cool artwork in there of like your typical London scenes, but with a very fantasy, you know, I think he described like a troll under Westminster Bridge and stuff. And
oh, that's cool.
So it looks visually really, really nice. But if you've never been to London before, or even if you have been before, there's going to be lots of like hints and tips of unusual places to go to. And he said this book has been created by nerds. So it's like where you've got like your normal London tour guides, this is going to be one for geeks.
Awesome, that sounds good.
And it's pretty good value as well. If you back it for £20, you get a soft copy of it. If you only wanted to back a tenner, you still get a digital copy.
Oh, that's
so
cool, that's pretty good.
I'm going to get involved in that, I think, because I quite like London and going down there, and it looks like a really nice product.
Awesome, sounds good. So yeah.
Are you just checking out those elves?
Yeah, they're really impressive. I think I might have to back these guys.
Yeah, I think if you back it on the first day, which obviously by the time this podcast goes out, you'll have passed that, you can get the entire range for £125, which does seem a bargain, to be fair.
Yeah. They're not the cheapest miniatures available, which makes that price even more of a bargain, but we've seen them in person, and they are super
high-quality resin miniatures, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really, really nice.
Yeah, it looks like 20 miniatures there for £125 on day one, which isn't too bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Awesome.
Excellent. That rounds up all of our news. Now, in a slight change to the normal running order, instead of delving into our feature, we're actually going to come back with our top three for reasons that will soon become apparent. So bear with us a moment while we prepare our top three. Okay, so we're going to do our top three how did you word it?
Hobby developments, was it?
Hobby developments, hobby innovations.
Top three things that have been created to help your hobby easier, better?
Help you hobbying?
Help you hobby easier.
That is the best we've got, Jay.
Yeah, okay. So, I'm going to start this week.
Right, okay.
We'll go around a slightly different way. So, my third choice for this year top three is, maybe a little bit of a cop-out, straight in with the cop-out, social media. I think social media has been a massive innovation, and the general community spirit when it comes to hobbying. I think...
If you're saying that then, I'm going to say electricity.
No.
It, you know, lights.
Yeah, oh, come on. No.
I do get Dave's point.
Yeah.
That is, especially on Twitter, I find over Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I just think the community seems better on Twitter.
I think you have to look in the right places on Facebook. There are some very good closed groups.
Yes, there are.
Such as the Great British Hobby League. I'm part of a Death Watch one when I had a bit of a Death Watch weakness.
Yeah.
But I'm still in there.
The other side to Facebook is there's some absolute holes of depression and hate and not very nice people.
No, but some of the private groups I'm on Facebook, they're really supportive and they give lots of positive tips and hints and stuff. So there is a community there. But you are right, Matt. Twitter, I find, is more
welcoming, more open. Yeah. Lots of interaction. I suppose on both Facebook and Twitter from the Games Workshop staff as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that in itself has been, and that obviously, I mean, I could go even more so into this and go into like Warhammer TV and their YouTube tutorials and stuff. But that's because that's its whole
you're boiling
point.
All that down to social media.
I'm boiling
media
all
as a
that
concept.
Down to social media as a concept. So yeah, I think for innovation, I think the big push on social media for hobbying is my third choice.
Okay, cool.
Jake, your third choice.
My third choice is not something I've used myself, but something I've seen a lot of other people use. And it's one of the, growing up when I was first getting into the hobby and painting and building armies, it was one of the last things I did, and it was one of my least favourite things I had to do, and that was basing miniatures. So I think you can get the moulded bases. Do you know
the Shattered Dominion, and I can't remember what the 40k one's called.
Yeah, like the Urban... Which
Sanctuary Imperial Alice.
Yeah, just really easy to get good looking, because the bases do add to the miniature's final sort of state.
Yeah, you know. I'd like to see some Dominion of Sigmar ones to match the new scenery. That'd be cool.
Maybe we will. Yeah.
I did think about this during the week, because I'm tempted to do all my Skaven on those bases, cause after what you'd mentioned to me, Matt, about them potentially being a slightly quicker way of doing masses of rats instead of basing the traditional way. Just very quickly painting some moulded bases. Yeah. But I was thinking maybe we've got some new ones on the horizon.
We've not seen any for a while, so I don't know. I mean, what I did for my demon ones was paint them on the sprue. Dead quick, paint them on the sprue. Just put a blob of super glue on the foot of your models and just put them on the base that they come with. They'll snap off dead easy then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... Otherwise, it's a bit finicky sometimes when I paint around the like robes and legs and stuff.
I think if you can paint them on the sprue, that's really simple. Yeah. Then. And I mean, you can just dry brush them dead quickly without worrying about messing up your model. But I think it's good. I mean, people are put off by basing miniatures with sand and slate, PVA glue, waiting for it to dry, spraying it different colours, and I think that's a cool like hack for getting models. Yeah, hobby hacks.
Number three,
hot hobby hacks.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. That's cool. Which is good, because that kind of segues nicely onto my number three.
Oh, go on.
Which is texture paints.
That was on my nearly made it list.
Nearly made it list. So this is, for those who don't know, essentially sand and paint mixed together.
I think it's actually
microparticles, isn't it? Yeah. Don't flush it down your sink, I suppose. The fish don't like that. But yeah, it's particles of various sizes. Most of them come in two flavours, a thick and a thin. With different kind of effects.
It's hard to remember which one's which.
It is. I have a little book with all my kind of colour schemes that I've used.
Yeah.
And then there'll be that one time I don't write it down. And then I'm just studying Games Workshop with two pots of paint. Looking like a madman trying to work out which one that I used. but yeah, this is really good. You just slap it on. You can probably get away with slapping it on. I tend to slap it on, dry brush it. Depending on the colour, I might put a wash before I dry brush it.
Yeah, in my experience, I don't even wash it. I tend to just dry brush it. I use the Astronite Granite. And I also mix them. So I'll mix in it. I'll base Astronite Granite and I'll mix a bit of the something mud. What's it called? Sterling mud,
Sterling mud, yeah.
Yeah, into it as well. It makes it. And then just dry brush it with Carrick Stone normally. I don't put an egress wash on it.
Yeah, for my Ever Chosen, I think I put a brown wash on him just to make it a bit look more earthy, whereas I guess a bit too... 40k, otherwise a bit more tarmac, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've washed all my Eldar and Stormcast so far. Cool. Agrax.
Yeah, Agrax. Agrax is the way to go. Well, for now,
it's Earthshade after all.
I like the. I can't remember what the colour is now of it. Is it the Badlands or Wastelands? Badlands.
Aquilian Badlands.
Yeah,
or
it could be that
Wasteland.
One. And there was a really cool. I think you can get it on the painting app. Actually, it tells you what washes and stuff to use. So I was using that with Lamenter's Yellow. And it looks awful. And then the next stage is to dry brush it with Terminus Stone.
Yeah.
Put the dry brush on and it just transforms it, and it looks like a really like desert wasteland type scheme. It's really, really incredible. So I use that for my ultramarines.
Yeah, I mean, like Jay said, if you go in the Citadel paint app, there's loads of different examples that you can use here to add some, you know, really easy bases compared to back in the day where it's, you know, quite a bit of work to put sand on.
Yeah.
Colour that. I mean, you could probably get away with sticking a wash on it and letting it absorb into the sand, and then put some flock on it. Yeah. And yeah, compared to just out of a pot, slap it on.
This is why some of my earliest models were never based.
Yeah, well, that's it. It was the same for me. It was always something I never looked forward to doing.
I still don't look forward to it.
Yeah,
but it's still my least favourite thing about
it. See, I tend to do it kind of mid model now, rather than leave it to the end.
I always leave mine till the end.
If you are using a textured paint, I recommend getting one of the spatulas.
Yes, definitely. I didn't have much luck using a brush until I got one of the spatulas.
Yeah. I've got a spatula. Yeah. Spatulas! Hobby innovation.
Innovation number two, the spatula. Dave, you can't just have generic innovations.
My second choice is the different coloured sprays. I think they make... I mean, when I was painting my Death Guard, that's a perfect example. My goodness, that Death Guard green spray is amazing.
It is really good.
It is so good. I'd spray that and then do like the trims and things and then just do an all-over wash and they looked amazing. I think the Death Guard green is the best spray I've used so far. The white, maybe not so much, but we've talked about this previously, haven't we, about the white sprays. But I mean, my Caradrons, I use the Fang spray. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I just think as a starting point, they're amazing.
Well, I did some, what are they called, Minotaurium containers. Because you get the big containers, then you got a lot of little scattered boxes and stuff, don't you? I split all that off across three box lids, sprayed one blue, whatever the blue is.
It's McCrag blue. It's
one red, corn red, Mephiston red, isn't it? Yeah. And then one Death Guard green, washed them all like Rath. Dry brushed them, lead belcher, I think, and they're pretty much done.
Yeah,
dead quick. Yeah, dead easy.
I think they're a super way of getting stuff painted quickly. I mean, I use on the Stormcast. I've been using McCrag blue, which was actually because you'd already sort of started undercoating some of the Stormcast ones. I started with that, because that was easier for the Sotek. Then go on.
Yeah, it was a good base colour for the turquoisey colour for your Celestial Vindicators, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's probably one of the...
There's quite a big range now as well of them, because you've got metallic sprays too.
Well, I really rate the metallics. Lead Belch is brilliant.
Yeah.
And the Retributor Gold's good. That one I find goes on better over another base colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, Retributor, I think I only ever used it a few times on some of my original Hammers of Sigmar. And I always felt like that went on a bit thicker than any of the other sprays. Or maybe it was just
I guess it's got heavier metallic particles in it, so I suppose the consistency is going to be different.
I look at some of the models that I've sprayed Retributor and done nothing else with, and like some of the detail has been lost, I find. So maybe I just had a bad experience.
Yeah, maybe.
Your second choice, Jack?
My second choice is easy to build.
Ooh, yeah.
So these were always, back in the day, the worst quality miniatures you could buy. The multi-part miniatures were always miles better than the easy to build that came in the starter, not the starter boxes, the starter battle forces, you know, like the box games for the editions. Nowadays, the easy to build kits are the equal, in some cases, better.
I'm guilty of turning my nose up at easy builds when they started doing them, but they are phenomenal kits.
Yeah.
I built the what's the new dreadnought for the Primaris?
The Redemptor
dreadnought. It's like 8 pieces or something, and it looks just as good as the real one.
No different than the actual one.
So good. And I mean, they don't need glow. In fact, I found for the Underworlds teams, they actually go better together without glow.
Yeah, I found, because I've glued mine from just habit. And yeah, I think there's no need to. And there are gaps on the Stormcast guys. I've got gaps. So yeah, you don't need to glue them. I didn't think about that at the time. You just assume you have to glue
plastic. Yeah, I was the same. It's, I suppose, re-educating ourselves about it, because that's the thing, we're stuck in our ways, to get these new innovations, and we're like, we'll stick to the past and do it how we always used to do it.
I think the only easy to build kit that I had a little bit of a bad experience with is Reichenhall the Grimhauler. I still need to ping it, actually, because I really wanted to use him when he leads in the Gash army. He's got quite a few gaps, and I tried to build him without gluing him to begin with, but some of the parts just weren't, didn't feel like they were going to stay there, so I ended up having to clear it. But okay. There's some quite big parts on him that needs filling.
Yeah, I remember at Warhammer Open Day, Tom Walton, I want to say, I think he's one of the designers.
Yeah.
Said that because they're like essentially precision engineered, when you put on that even that micron of glue, creates a gap naturally in the model.
Too clever for their own good.
Yeah.
But take nothing away from that model. I mean, you wouldn't believe that's an easy build kit.
Yeah.
The amount of detail and how awesome he looks.
Yeah.
And I mean. One advantage that the multi-part kits had historically was that you could pose them and customize them a little bit. But I look back at the current tactical marines compared to the Primaris marines, which are more limited in the posing of them, but they were easy build, the first ones that came out. But the easy build ones, there's a lot of variety in the different single poses. And because, I don't know, it must be the way they can build the sprues or piece the parts together, they look miles better than the old. I mean, it must be a subjective thing. But
they're very clever with the frames as well. They often, if you've got a lot of variations, they'll often have an alternate head or an alternate arm. I mean, all the Blood Bowl kits are, I think, just one frame duplicated, but they'll put enough pieces so it's the same body, but a slightly different head or a slightly different arm just changes the silhouette of the model.
We saw that with the Black Legion. They facing one way, facing the other.
From Blackstone Fortress. I was going to say that's a perfect example, isn't it? Just by moving the head the other way, it looks like a different model.
Yeah.
It's really, but it's not. That.
So I suppose that's an advantage. Well, they're all CAD design now, aren't they? They can mock this up and see it in real time and tweak it on the fly. Where back in the day, where you hand sculpted a model, how much work would it take to make an alternate sculpt of something?
Yeah. So it would have been easier just to make a basic pose that you could just customize yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, a skilled hobbyist can even customize these easy to build models.
Yeah,
as well,
I've converted up some of the. We got a lot of easy build marines with Conquest magazine.
Yeah.
That I've changed a few poses just so you've not got three guys all standing in the same pose. And everyone's got. I mean, everyone's got big bits boxes. I suppose we have.
Yeah.
That's the advantage we've
got. A lot of people have taken the ones that another perfect example in Conquest. You got that Primaris Lieutenant with all the Ultramarines logos on him. Quick
file them down.
And suddenly he's a generic Primaris Lieutenant.
So, easy to build. If you've not used them yet and you've been in the hobby a long time, I'd check them out because of building. The Shadespire's a good one to look at because they're all easy to build Shadespire gangs and they're fantastic. So.
We've mentioned him before and he obviously does the painting videos now for Games Workshop, but check out Nick Baton's Twitter. He's painted all of the Underworld gangs.
Underworld, yes.
And on Hangout and Paint yesterday was doing the... I'm really terrible with Space Marine units. The guys with the Flamers.
Aggressors.
The easy build ones, and they look brilliant.
Yeah.
Where back in the day, you'd be like, "Oh, I'll buy the proper kit because it's better."
Yeah.
Side by side, I don't think you'd be able to tell the difference.
The only downside with easy build Space Marines is the shoulder pads are sculpted on. So if you did want to get some hold of some of the upgrade sprues, like when I was looking at Death Watch, I like having my Death Watch kind of on one arm and then your chapter markings on the other. The easy build kit, suddenly you got a lot of taking off the shoulder. That is the only downside.
Yeah.
That is the only downside. So. Awesome. Your second choice, Matt?
My second choice are technical paints. Now, these came out a couple of years ago now, I think, and the initial range had the rust effects. So you had a kind of a gritty, a typhus corrosion, it's called.
Yeah.
It's like a very dark wash with some grit in it. So when you put the wash on, it leaves bits of mucky stuff that you can then dry brush over with Riser Rust. And those flecks all kind of show up and really, really brilliant rust effect. I use it on all my Nurgle models. There was the Nurgle kind of sickly, glossy green. That
Nurgle rot.
Which again, really, really effective paint. That's one that you can potentially overuse because it's very green. But again, works really well in kind of limited amounts. And the same goes for Blood for the Blood God, where you could go crazy with it. But I think with, again, limited application, you can make it look really good. I mean, you could just coat everything.
I've always fancied using blood for the blood gout.
I like it. I use it for like tongues and stuff on monsters. You can have it slick.
Some of the
effect.
Best uses I've seen of it are people who have painted stuff like white scars or like a very bright armour and then splattered it.
Oh, you know what looks with the snow winters. As well?
Yeah. Yeah, I bet that would look cool.
So, yeah, all the technical paints. And we saw a couple of new ones come out, which I guess are the precursors to contrast with the Nighthaunt colours that came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hexwraith Flame and Nighthaunt Gloom.
I'm useless with names and stuff today.
I was
going to
say Hexwraith Gloom, but...
combination. Yeah.
And they're really, really good paints for really quickly painting ghosty things.
I can vouch for this.
I really rate the technical paints. Again, a lot of people kind of turned their nose up at them because these are effects that you can do in different ways, but I'm all up for... If there's a way I can get an awesome effect... just out of a bottle, then brilliant, go for it. I don't want to be spending 4 hours trying to get the same effect by using traditional methods.
So, some people obviously very, very much enjoy the painting element of the hobby and enter Golden Demon and they want all like the different layers of paint. But then there's people like us that just want to roll some dice. But we want to use painted armies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, perfect. Perfect for that.
Awesome.
Excellent. We're round to our top choices. And my top choice is something we've already touched upon in this top three, and that is washes. So Nuln Oil, Agrax Earthshade, all of them. I mean, I never used them before, really. And when I started to finally get into painting, because there was a time when Dave just wouldn't paint. Jay used to shout at me like constantly, like, Dave, just sit here and paint with me for an hour.
Well, since
I'd paint like a model, and they'd be like, "I'll go and make a brew or something, Jay," and I'd just completely like, it's like, right, I painted a colour, that's it, down tools, I'm happy with what I've done, and walk away. But now, like, yeah, I'm a changed person now, and part of that is down to washes.
Well, how long have I been playing games with you guys? What, 5-6 years now, maybe? Yeah. And to see your painting progress come on has been really, really cool. I mean, we did that first trip to Warhammer World, and I don't think I'm joking. It was a slog for you to get those Ultramarines done, wasn't it?
I never finished them, and I don't think I even washed them. And you know what? If I went back now and washed them, I think I'd be so much happier with them. And I think I will do that eventually. Yeah. I'll go back in because I look at them and I think, you know, since then I've like moved on so much. But actually, I could probably rescue these Ultramarines a little bit.
Yeah.
If I put a wash on them and go back and do some of the trim work again, these could actually look really cool. And do all the bases, because like, I don't think any of the bases are done, or like very minimal. And they could actually be quite a good army.
Well, I think every project you've done since then, you've like added a new kind of thing to your creative toolbox, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's a great thing with the hobby, isn't it? It's just... well, it's what this whole top three is about. It's about innovation, and I think each one has helped me. And it's no joke that when I paint a miniature, like even my Stormcast, I'm like, it doesn't look, kind of looks good. And then you put a wash on it, it's like, oh. Actually, the best example was the Carriage on Overlords.
Yes.
I didn't think he looked that great when I, like, you sprayed him in the fang and then you did some of the other details. And you look at him then and you think, don't like this. Put a wash on him, suddenly he's a completely different miniature.
Well, I found the same with the Fire Slayers and my Caradron scheme. They don't look great, but the colour, because it's a dark blue wash that I do, changes the colours completely.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's, yeah, amazing. Really cool stuff. And there's so much variety in each of the different washes as well. I use quite a few of them for different things. And yeah, I just think they're a great thing. They're a great
amazing.
Tool. Your top choice, Jay?
My top choice is the Warhammer painting app
on
my phone, which I find really useful. It's really useful for finding the name of a paint. It's also got the cool paint matching thing in it, where you can match paints. And also, it's like a little mini catalogue of tutorials for painting different colours. It suggests what shade to use, what highlight to use, and it tells you this is what it'll look like if you dry brush, this is what it'll look like if you use traditional layering and edge highlights. Maybe that green's a bit too light. Oh, what other greens do they do? Oh, this green. Oh, yeah, look, there's a backpack paint that green. I think the Warhammer paint, that's very handy. It means you don't need to go into a Games Workshop store and pick up the paints off the
Well, I use the kind of inventory kind of function on it because I'm as we've seen on this podcast, I'm terrible at remembering the names of things. So to open up the app or send the wife a screenshot of, oh, if you go and buy the Games Workshop, then you get these paints for me, please.
I've started using the wish list, and something that's already been mentioned in the top three is the basing tutorials on the app as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really handy, and it's just a simple app as well.
It is, because when you think there must be over 100 different individual paints you can buy now in the range.
Oh, there's a lot of paints in the range now, yeah.
And to have all that just in one little online, well, it's a little app on your phone, it's very handy.
Yeah.
Well, my number one segues into that quite well.
Again,
so, all of the tutorials on there were put together from the colour kind of swatches, I suppose, that Peachy and Duncan use for painting models. And I think the biggest innovation that we've had that has helped loads of people paint models is the Warhammer TV paint videos.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you had some slightly kind of out of context pictures. No joke, some of the heavy metal tutorials were put your base coats on, do a wash, question mark, awesome, amazing looking model. And it's like, okay, how do I do that? No, it's not working. Where with the videos, you know how to apply it. You can see the consistency of the paint. You can see the different techniques being used. Because it's a lot easier to understand that when you can see it, rather than being told how to, I don't know, blend or edge highlight or even like dry brushing things for, you know, a long time. Until somebody teaches you how to do it, you don't tend to do it right, do you? So I think we started off with Duncan doing a lot of the videos, and then as it's got more popular, they've brought in Chris Peach, and we've got Nick Baton doing them now as well. And they've been really, really good. I mean, personally used probably all my big models, really. I've been based on them. So with Nagash, painted based on Duncan's scheme, Archaon, my Lord of Change, I think I used his scheme. My whole Nighthaunt army is based on the one that Chris Peach did, which was like a little 5-minute video. I've still got the Gene Steeler Court ones bookmarked for the army I'm doing at the minute, because it's easier than my old book full of recipes, because you can see exactly how it goes on in which order. And I love the paint videos, they're awesome.
I did Durfu, and I used that tutorial to, do you know the blending on the sword? Some of the best blending I've ever done. And it was just following that tutorial that Duncan did, and I'm no expert painter, I've never blended like that before, but it was a really, really easy to follow his video and get that effect. Durfu to L'Oreal was Duncan. The rest of my Silvernef was actually the painting videos. Gulliman was the painting video. The Redemptor Dreadnought, that was also the painting video. The only thing that I would, not a criticism, a suggestion for the painting videos, is I found it hard to... it would have been good in the comment section or the description, it told you exactly what paints were used in that video.
What you should do is tweet the painting team and suggest that.
They do pop up on the screen during a different section, so you'll see for this phase we're going to be using these colours.
But if you want to... In the beginning, they do like the list of stuff, but it's only for a few seconds.
No, I agree. Normally, I have to pause that, fill it into my wish list on my single painting app.
Yeah.
Where if you just had a list of them, where you could just copy and paste that, or even better, a one-click bundle where you can get all the paints on the store.
Yeah. Or a little QR code that loaded onto your paint app and put them on your wish list.
Free ideas here, guys.
Yeah. I think one of the first times I used a tutorial to great effect was for the Emperor's Sword for Gulliman.
Yeah.
I was really proud of that, really like happy with how it turned out, and that was just following the tutorial.
And I think what really helps is that they've all, you know, obviously all massively into the hobby as well. Peachy and Duncan were both on the army painter team, so you know they've done their time painting you know, the armies that we see in books and magazines and on the streams. Nick's done various roles within Games Workshop, you know, they all know their stuff, which is really good, rather than some, you know, random person who maybe not necessarily doing it for fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's not mechanical. You can tell that they enjoy painting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I mean, they've created Two Thin Coats memes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
they just bleed memes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think there's some really good suggestions there. And we do have some community top three picks towards the end of the podcast. However, we're going to take a pause here, because when we come back, we're going to have this week's feature, which kind of concentrates a little bit more on hobby innovations in general. So keep listening. So for our feature on this week's podcast, this was really inspired by the incoming new contrast range of paints from Games Workshop. We wanted to do a podcast which was focused on the innovation within the hobby for building miniatures, painting miniatures, gaming and such, which is why we did this week's top three. Now, obviously, we've covered quite a few bases within the top three, but there's so much more yet to discuss, isn't there?
Yeah, I think we always want to have a bit of a walk down memory lane as well, as far as kind of painting and how it's come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but my first miniatures that I bought, I painted with, like, Humbrol paints.
Yeah, it's like the enamel paints.
Enamel paints, yeah.
Which... I can't remember.
Remember, you had your Ultramarines in that really... pastely looking blue
yeah, that's
and
true.
I had the Eldar with the it was also used the blue and the yellow and the silver for the visors, and I remember I had the old metal Wraith Lords.
Oh, yeah.
I had two of them and I painted one blue and yellow and the other one yellow and blue.
Yellow. Because, you know, we're a bit spoilt now that there's literally a Games Workshop up the road and other stockists that sell it. Where at the time, it was a fair trek for us to get any kind of Warhammer goodies.
Up to Chester on the train, Dave.
Chester or Hanley.
Yeah, Chester or Hanley, yeah.
Where, you know, so getting paints, it was a big deal, really. Where, you know, you could go to a, you know, hobbycraft style shop and get paints that might be fine. Not necessarily Citadel ones. I mean, they did have a fair paint range at the time. Probably not as easy to use as the current range.
No. What I do remember from painting is maybe that's what put me off. Yeah. I really struggled to paint anything well.
Well, there was no guides thinning your paints. Never even needed to thin your paints. I just dipped my brush straight in. Mixing paints, never really mixed the paints. And also, what paint would you use to highlight this colour? What paint would you use to shade that colour?
Even the concept of highlighting or shading, really.
Yeah, that's it. There's no. I think it was a couple of weeks ago we talked on the podcast where I discovered the chestnut ink wash over gold. It's like, what? I've discovered something amazing here.
Yeah.
But it was all just like figuring out for yourself.
We didn't have Peachy and Duncan telling us what to do.
No.
Even the guides were, if I remember rightly, a lot of them were like, you know, heavy metal kind of based. More.
I think
they kind of assumed a lot of basic knowledge. It was more all about advanced techniques that went immediately over your head.
I think they always had on the box art, and at the back of the box, they'd always have the one scheme with, like, basically just this is this colour, this is this colour, this is this colour. But then you're like, what about the rest of the model? And like, but how have you done that? You just give me a paint name, you know, what do I do with this information?
And I think White Dwarf tried to kind of like help with that. They started to have more kind of paint guides, but again, it was not in like massive detail sometimes. It was like, you said, just like this colour there, that colour there.
Yep.
Not much about how to do it.
Yeah.
And I think when that really started changing, and it must be a good 15, 16 years ago now, I guess, is when the foundation paint range came out.
Yeah.
So I think the foundation paints came out to complement the existing range, and they basically were your base paints, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They were heavy pigments to do all your base colours.
They would go over as well, so you could put the yellow over the black and things like that, which was historically quite difficult.
And they had the first washers at the same time, didn't they?
Devil and Mud.
What
was the black one called? It wasn't Norn Oil, it wasn't back then.
I can't remember what it was called. And they had some nice little bundle boxes of these. I think I picked up both of these to complete my range because they're all really, really useful colours.
Yeah.
Child on Granite, I think you mentioned a few weeks ago, was an amazing paint in that range. And it was a kind of a precursor to what we've got now. You'd get your foundation paints to block everything in, wash it down with these new washers, and then use the existing paint range to highlight. But because they're all different ranges and the consistencies were different, it wasn't quite as easy as what we've got now. So rewind about 6 or 7 years, maybe, the last kind of paint refresh, when they introduced the Citadel paint system, where they kind of, they wiped the entire paint range and started again, which, you know, some people weren't happy with. You know, people had got their, people get very, you know, I suppose, possessed of the colours that they've got. And
don't like
to.
Change.
Don't like change. And the, you know, starting again from scratch. And I think it was a good move. They broke it down into base colours, layer colours, shades,
edge.
Dry brush colours, edge colours, glazes.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I really think it was the first time you had step by step guides. I think that's round about the time Duncan started doing videos. They had the kind of the weird kind of fold out paint guide book.
Yeah, which, I remember those. Yeah.
And that might have been just before like the Duncan era. Because that was trying to explain it in more detail, but again,
it came with a CD.
It did. And it was. It's difficult to explain painting techniques in words. You need to see it, really. And
yeah.
I think that was the logic of the CD, maybe.
Yeah, there was some good ones. I remember when I was toying with a Seraphon army. I remember I found one online. maybe not completely legitimate.
That's called stealing.
But
game.
I had a look at it, and it was. It was good. It was good. I mean, like you say, it's better to see it in action on something like YouTube. But I thought it was quite detailed, really.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that was the beginning of it. And then once everyone had kind of accustomed to the new paints and actually they're pretty good, then people got more comfortable with them. And that's when, you know, the whole kind of new Games Workshop era started, where we got to learn properly how to paint, even if you'd never walked into a Games Workshop before.
This is when I started to paint more, I think. I don't remember ever really using that many foundation paints. I think I remember buying quite a few.
Okay.
But I don't think I really painted.
Well, that period, I painted lots, but I think I had like one game.
Yeah.
I like the foundation paints. I use them a lot for my armies. I love the yellow. Avalon Sunset. It was the Yan and Dark Sun.
The old one.
Good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on how like the paint mangers developed over the years then? Do you think we've, you know, is it gone well? Have we got a decent paint range now? Do you miss the old paints that we've had before?
Personally speaking, I think it's much better, and I would never ever want to go back. I don't miss anything about the old paint ranges, but that's probably a bit jaded by the fact that I never really enjoyed painting, and I've only really started enjoying painting since the new ranges come in.
That's half the thing, you know. Let's not forget, at the end of the day, Games Workshop want to sell models. You're more likely to buy more models if you can paint your models.
Yeah.
If you're put off from painting models by paints that are difficult to use because they're, you know, the old ones are quite thin, you have to build them up a gazillion layers that look really good when you do it, but it takes a lot more effort.
I think that's part of it, but I think for me anyway, I've never been an arty person ever in my entire life, so it wasn't really about knowing how to apply paint. It was just painting in general. I was just fearful of it because I felt like I just couldn't paint. Like, I can't paint anything. I can't draw. I can't paint. It looks terrible. I am put off by this. I never want to paint again. It's so easy to cheat now with new paints, and especially with contrast coming as well, that even if you're not Da Vinci or whatever, that's a really bad example. You don't really much remember.
Da Vinci
didn't
play
paint
Warhammer.
Anything. But you see what I mean. Like, I'm no painter.
I bet you have an awesome story.
I can now enjoy the benefits of painting.
Awesome. How about you, Joe? What are your kind of thoughts on how the paint's like changed over the years?
I think now it's not just the paint range, it's all the supporting sort of material and things around it. You've got the paint app now, like you say, the guys online and in the White Dwarf. It's easy it's more integrated. You can watch the video, you know which paints to use, you know which paints shade it, which paints highlight it. Whereas previously you were going in blind, really.
Yeah.
I fancy a blue colour. Well, okay. And that was all you had, really. Whereas now it's a lot easier to plan ahead and pull it all together. I think they've done a great job. I don't think there's anything I miss from the previous ranges. You always had some favourite colours, but I think pretty much every colour you used to have is available in some new form now with a different name.
I do think the consistencies are better now as well.
Yeah, well.
Some of them
are. So I remember, and I don't know if I remember this correctly, but in my mind, I remember the blacks used to be, the old Chaos Black paint was brilliant, and the White Skull, was it, back in the day?
Yeah.
White Skull was awful. Now, you've got about three or four different whites. So you've got Ceramite White, White Scar, You've got the greys that support that, like the Ulfwyn and Celestial to support those whites. I find now white is the easier colour to paint than black. I find the bad and black, it's probably my least favourite paint.
I don't get on with the bad and black, no. Compared to Chaos Black, where you have no issues with it.
Yeah, so that's my only... I don't like the bad and black, but other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, the... I mean, white is still hard to paint, but it's the easiest it's been to paint white.
Yeah, you can't just paint white flat. You still need to do a bit of work to get your whites looking nice.
I'm interested to see what the contrast whites can be like.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different whites, isn't there? Because when we were at Warhammer Fest, they showed you some different, like, the Space Marines with the different whites. Yeah, that looks really exciting.
You say you like whites, you still have to put more work on them. I'm using a lot of the celestial grey at the moment on the wings of my retributors, and I'm not doing anything else to them because I think over the blue they look really good. I had tried washing them and don't like the finish that they came out with, so I'm just leaving them now.
I saw a post, I can't remember who it was, by one of the other metal team, and they said if you're painting white, paint it grey and only use white for the final edge highlight.
Yeah,
because it looks better, it's more natural, I suppose.
What about stepping away from maybe paint for a second, what about other innovations within the hobby? For example, maybe the paint handles. Do you guys use those?
I do indeed use the paint handles. I mean, I've always used a paint pot with a blob of blue tack on as a kind of poor man's paint handle.
Okay.
And I've always used that. And I still do that now, even though I've got a paint handle on the side. I guess just out of habit.
Yeah, I've seen some of your pictures of the old blue tack with the
yeah.
Dan, I've got a handle and I'm starting to force myself to use it a bit more because I think it is quite good, but I before it came along, I just used to hold my minis by the base. And now I find myself still holding more, especially if I've got quite a few to do in one go.
Well, yeah,
then there's no point taking models on and off.
I suppose that's why, you know, I've got my guys on like 20 odd pots of paint because I tend to batch paint. So I'll often spray them on them as well. So I'll stick them to that, spray them up, and then just paint them straight onto there.
You'd have a different coloured paint handle if you sprayed them whilst on the paint handle.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some people get some. Just
a paint job.
Yeah, just some like film or a glove or just something to protect the handle. It'll still clamp through, you know, whatever surface you put it on.
I've been using the paint handle while I've been painting my Skaven warband for Night Vault, and I'm starting to get used to it now, but I do tend to almost put my hand past it.
It's good for being able to get to angles that you wouldn't be able to get to if you're just holding it naturally, I suppose.
Yeah. What about you, Jay? I know the other week I caught you holding the paint handle but not actually using the paint handle.
I don't think about it. It's whatever I pick up. Sometimes I put the model in the paint handle, sometimes I just pick the model up. Sometimes I've glued it onto the paint lids. I went through a phase where I was like painting the old Space Marines where I would not glue the heads in because I was doing the heads a different colour.
Yeah.
And I'd stick a pin in the bottom of the head and blue tack that onto an old paint pot.
Well, my Deathcore Krieg, I mean, I painted them years and years ago and I wanted to spend a bit more time doing them. And I did them in sub-assemblies for how many guardsmen there are in that army. It must be about 50 models.
Yeah.
And all of them were in sub-assemblies with the head separate, the backpack separate, all on bits of cork, which I think is something you've used in the past.
I have used cork, but as a basing material.
As a handle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that took a long time. Yeah. I think if I did Krieg again, I'd find a way to cheat.
Yeah, that does sound like an awful lot of effort.
Yeah. I rate the paint handler. It's pretty good. It's a bargain price as well.
Yeah.
It's well worth adding to your toolbox.
Yeah, I think I got one with Conquest.
Yeah. The tools are really good now as well. The snippers are the best they've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
The current snippers. The new knife, I don't like as much as the old knife. But a knife's a knife. You can get a generic knife. Yeah. The good thing about the clippers, it's got a fine blade for cutting sprues.
Yeah.
Where I found, you know, cheap ones that you can get from model stores are quite abrasive and they can damage the frame.
Yeah.
Well, not even the frame, but damage the model if you're not careful with it.
Yeah.
Do you use the mould line remover?
I do, yeah. The old one, I think they've just changed the handle, but yeah, I like the mould line remover. Yeah. It's a lot kinder to the model than using the back of a blade.
Yeah.
I've never removed mold lines.
That's something that now you're getting into your painting a bit.
I thought that might cause a bit of controversy on the podcast.
No, it's not. I never used to remove mold lines either, and I've got like whole units and stuff I painted previously with mold lines on, but it pays to remove them if you want a nice looking army.
It's that next step up, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
But you're getting there, Dave. You're at that stage now where taking mold lines, and I'll be disappointed if you don't.
See, in Vice, I always drill my gun barrels as well.
You never hit Dave with your bolters.
Yeah.
Because they've got nothing to shoot out of.
I haven't tried the new one yet. I need a new one because it's knackered, but I'll keep going until it falls apart, and then I'll have to buy a new one, I think.
This might be an interesting product. What about Games Workshop brushes? Have they improved over time?
So, I did use Games Workshop brushes for a long time. When they had the new brush range that came out about the same time as the Citadel Paint system, the wash brushes and the glaze brushes I found really good. The dry brushes I found really good.
Yeah.
The standard brushes for doing your kind of detail main work
and stuff,
I wasn't keen on.
I'm the same.
The Artificer brushes were really good, but they are Winsor & Newton brushes.
Yeah.
So I quickly decided to pick up a full set of Winsor & Newton brushes, which, you know, they're not cheap, they're like £12 a brush. But I find that they'll keep a point a lot longer, they're a lot more accurate. Brushes are a very personal thing, aren't they?
You know,
I know you like the army painter brushes, don't you?
I like
you,
the
Jay?
Army painter ones, yeah.
I just like the Winsor & Newton ones. But I use Games Workshop with dry brushing, I use them for basing, I use them for washes. The wash brushes have like a large reservoir, so they hold quite a lot.
Yeah.
The glaze brushes are really nice as well, they're very precise. So, yeah, I'd say some of them are and some of them aren't for the ultimate cop-out answer there, Dave.
Okay. See, I never used to do much in the way of painting, which is why I asked that question, because I can't remember what the old brushes were like. When I started to up my painting game, I was asking you guys like what brushes do you use, and I ended up punting for some Element Games ones, and I've really enjoyed using them.
Yeah.
I did notice a few weeks ago that my general brush is starting to go a bit weird, like it's losing its point and stuff, and I've tried using the soap, and it's just... And I happen to be in a really cheap shop in a nearby town a few weeks ago, and they had some watercolour brushes by some random make, just like a set of three for like £8 who were. My wife spotted them and she said, you know, you've got some brushes here. And I was like, these are probably going to be absolutely terrible, but I really fancy just taking like just a punt at it.
Yeah.
So I bought this like one pack of just little basic brushes. And you know what? The little, what I would now use as my regiment brush, it's really good.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm doing all my base colours and stuff with this I can't remember what the make's called, but it's just like a watercolour, and it's really good. It's become my new regimen. And then I just use my Element character brushes and stuff
for the detail.
For the details and the trims and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I found that the smaller pointed ones that came in this pack aren't as great. But the one with the bigger, more general base brush is great.
That's cool.
But I think it pays just to try out different brushes to find one that you're comfortable
definitely.
With.
Definitely. I mean, I went through loads and loads of Games Workshop brushes that they didn't seem to last long and kept fraying. And I put off buying some expensive brushes for a long time, where my current brush, it's a bit dogged now. I've bought a replacement brush, but I can't bring myself to take this brush out back and shoot it. I got that set of brushes for my 30th, because that's when I did my Demon Army, and I'm, what, 36 this year? So it's been going 6 years. It's not bad going for a brush.
Isn't that right, yeah.
I need binning. It does, but I can't bring myself to bin it. It might live on as like a base for gluing sand.
That's what I do. I demote them. They go from like being my detail brush to my, this was my quick base coating brush. And this is now my dry brush.
I'm always impressed. It's not in this room with us, unfortunately, but I'm really impressed with your mug.
My mug of
brushes.
Yeah. There's always
of various conditions. So cool. So there have been some really good innovations in the hobby. What about gaming-wise? I mean, there's not been an awful lot. I mean, there's only so much you can change a dice and a tape measure.
Well, I mean, you've mentioned social media. Can the digital side of things help? Like, you've got all your war scrolls for Age of Sigmar in the app. Being able to build your army list in the app Battlescribe for 40k has existed for a while, but I suppose it's as easy as it's been for a long time to write a list.
I mean, they have brought different things into make gaming that little bit easier. Like you mentioned, the War Scroll cards and your stratagem cards and things like that. We've even got things that are quite easy to overlook, like your 9-inch rulers and your 3-inch little gauges and stuff.
Oh, I am partial to a 3-inch gauge.
You are. You've got a massive collection of them. I mean, it's impossible to kind of predict where they're going to take sort of hobby innovations in the future. I mean, obviously we've got Contrast coming, which is super exciting. I mean, we've all now tried Contrast.
Well, I mean, we all completely missed the mark on the run-up to Contrast of predicting what it was going to be.
We were
thinking too small, weren't we? With you know, even the dip system, arguably that's kind of what it is, but infinitely better.
Because it highlights, not just shades, which is...
Well, that was the argument, wasn't it? You were like, you've still got a base coat here, so what's the speed of dipping it over washing it? But this is literally all three of your initial coats... Yeah. In one pot.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, I know I've kind of, we banged on about this last week, but until you use it, we were skeptical, it was safe to say.
I think we were all just a little bit disappointed in the queue when we were waiting to go in and the news broke on Warhammer community.
To be fair, the leaked images that we saw didn't look great either compared to the stuff that we've seen, done at the show, and even the stuff that we painted ourselves, just seeing how that paint separate, it's weird, it's a weird kind of, consistency to it. It isn't like normal paint. You do put it on pretty thickly and it will separate out that gradient, so your darker colours go in the recesses, your lighter ones sit on top. It's some kind of witchcraft, I think, but it works. It does what it says on the tin.
We're that impressed with Contrast, I think it's safe to say at this point that we're off air. We've been discussing a bit of a painting challenge, haven't we?
So I mean, it's not often you get a whole new paint range added.
No.
And, you know, when Jay throws down the gauntlet initially a challenge, we're not one to shy away from a challenge. So Jay had suggested, he'd been umming and ahhing about doing some Seraphon, I think, hadn't you?
Well, no, I wasn't even bothered. It's these contrast paints. I just want to use these contrast paints, and I think that'll be... I want to pick an army to do with contrast paints.
So Jay has suggested... that he might be able to paint 1,000 points of Seraphon, skink heavy.
Yeah.
In a week.
Yeah.
This is the same Jay that highlights goblins up to like 3 or 4 stages.
Yeah.
It could take you a week to do a goblin.
Yeah.
Or a squig.
Yeah. Or a shield.
Or a shield, as we found out.
So I'll meet this challenge. I'll do it. I haven't decided what army I'm going to do. We've thrown around a few ideas: Empire, or maybe some skeleton heavy undead, or maybe some Ideneth. Tweet in if you've got any ideas for me. I'm open to suggestions. And Dave, you've been planning doing Skaven for a long time.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for doing some Skaven. I am tempted maybe for this challenge maybe to do something different, but I don't think I will, because I've kind of been toying in the back of my mind about doing Khorne. I think Khorne could be quite good with Contrast.
I think Khorne would be good with Contrast.
Do Khorne! Because you're going to do Skaven anyway. You're doing Skaven.
Well, I'm doing Skaven.
Exactly.
Full stop.
Yeah,
full
stop. So start. Do Khorne. Because you wouldn't do Khorne otherwise.
Okay.
Maybe.
He's doing Skaven.
We've got a few weeks to think about this, because obviously Contrast is out in June.
Yep.
We don't know exactly when. Could be end of June.
Could be start of June.
Could be start of June.
Could be the middle of June.
So call this like a precursor to a future podcast when we'll probably be discussing this... in more detail when we've made our final decisions on what we're going to paint.
Yeah.
Contrast cast.
Yeah. I mean, depending on, budgets and how it fits in the month. If it's at the end of June, I'll probably pick up the whole range, because I think they'll be all really useful.
They'll probably do a bundle.
Yeah, if they do. If 36 paints, a couple of quid each, that's not too bad, is it? And then the following month, nail, I don't know, a million skeletons in a week.
Yeah, do it. 1,000 points, army.
Well, using those paint...
Matt should have to do 3 armies and speed paints anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I did actually say this before. I have been tempted to get some hobbits for a Middle-earth strategy battle game. So I might do them as well. 2 armies.
Awesome. If you have any input or any feedback about hobby innovations within Games Workshop or similar products, do let us know via social media at Sprues and Brews or facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Before we wrap up this week's podcast, We do have time for our community top three picks. We're going to take a pause here and come back with that in a moment. Matt, your data slate is at the ready, so let's hear the community top three picks.
So, David Metcalf says washes, better brushes, and GWT tutorials.
Cool.
Hmm. Dogma 9 Head Factory, different name. Spare time, that's always good. Adding water to paints, also brushes and shades. Also spray paint, I used to undercoat by hand. I'm old. Well, I used to undercoat by hand.
They used to do the special, I don't know if they still do. The
Smelly
actual,
primer, was it called?
The undercoat like in pots, didn't they, yeah.
In fact, I've still got some. I use it occasionally for when, you know when it's really annoying when you spray up a mod and you've missed a bit?
Yeah.
I get the old, I think it's called Imperial Primer now.
Yeah,
just to touch it up. It's not a great paint, that, though, I don't find. I think because it's like a kind of sealant, it's really hard unless you shake it for about an hour beforehand.
Yeah.
Mike Loads Minis says a wet palette. This is now an essential tool for me. I've never used a wet palette, but I've heard good things.
I've heard some good things.
Painting handle allows me to paint longer before hand cramp sets in. And the current GW paint system makes it easier to find the base shade layer combo for any situation and yet so flexible.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Fabius Fulgrim says Larman Medium. That is good. Thin colours without desaturating the intensity of the colour, I suppose, is the best way to describe it. Better brushes and a wet palette. Phil Dobson says the original washes and foundation paints, they were awesome. Larman Medium and the mould line scraper. And Paul Griffiths says the paint handles, free rule sets, which we didn't even mention on kind of getting you into the hobby easier. Yeah. And the YouTube videos by Duncan and Co.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good assortment. I think we're really spoiled at the minute, aren't we, compared to when we started?
We are. And like I said earlier, it's impossible to say where it's going to go in the future post-contrast.
Yeah, it's so watch this space. So next week on the podcast, we will be looking at Forbidden Power, the new expansion to Age of Sigmar.
Yes.
Now, in that book, I've heard there's a few little teasers of future projects that might happen. So next week on the podcast, we want to know your top three teasers from Games Workshop. These could be obvious teaser trailers, or they could be little snippets that just maybe set up a future project or book or expansion.
Ooh. So this is for... Right, so we're not talking like really old teasers that turned out to be nothing.
You could do if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Cool. I was going to take some codex and
Battletoan
reading.
A bit of research.
This is going to take some work. Awesome. Yeah, okay. You can send in your top threes straight after listening to this podcast. Tweet them to us, pop them on Facebook, send us a message, put them on the website. Send us a postcard, carrier pigeon, however you want to get them to us.
carrier pigeon.
Let us know your top threes. That about wraps up this week's podcast. So we'll be back again next week, same time,
same place,
same channel. Yeah. Yes. Enjoy your week. See you all then.
See you later.
Bye.